Welcome to the Divorce View Talk Show with your co-hosts, Joni Winberg and Rosalind Sadaka, your divorce mentor team. If you're contemplating divorce, going through a divorce, or are ready to move forward after your divorce, then we've got you covered. We'll even help you get back into the dating game. This show will lift your spirits, answer your questions, and guide you through the challenges you're facing. And our guest divorce experts will provide insights, tips, and tools to support you and the children you love during and after divorce. And now, here's your divorce mentor team, Joni and Rosalind.
Welcome to the Divorce View Talk Show. Hello, it's Joni Winberg, Certified Human Behavior Consultant, Divorce Mentor, and CEO of the National Association of Divorce for Women and Children. My guest today is Dr. Charles Rawlings. He's a board-certified neurosurgeon for nearly 20 years, became a lawyer in 2002, and now specializes in medical malpractice. He is the author of the book, It Really Is That Complicated, a real-world examination of how men and women react differently in everyday situations. So I'm excited to have you on the show here, Dr. Rawlings, and to learn more. So welcome.
Thank you very much, Joni. It's nice to be here. I appreciate this opportunity.
Well, it's great. So tell me, how does a neurosurgeon decide to become an attorney?
Oh, that's an interesting first question.
Like I've never just have to start there because it was my curiosity.
Sure. When I was back in med school, I almost went to law school then. But I decided since neurosurgery residency was several years, so to speak, I would go ahead and use that as a plan later on in life. I became interested as a neurosurgeon doing some medico-legal consulting, and really reinvigorated my enjoyment of the law. And over the course of the years, I got more and more involved in some medico-legal consultations and some work, and I had always planned on going back to law school. My partner retired, and so I had a choice of what to do. I was on call for 24/7 the last year or two of my practice. And again, like I said, I had sort of an opportunity, a crossroads, if you will, and I decided to go back to law school, and I actually was doing neurosurgery in the first year of law school, so it's always interesting.
I guess. Oh, my gosh.
but everyone asks me, you know, don't you miss neurosurgery? I still see patients. I don't do surgery. But my patients are my clients right now because I do mainly medical malpractice, so I see a lot of different medical conditions and medical negligence. To be perfectly honest, the law is fascinating. It is actually probably more intellectually rigorous than neurosurgery. I know it sounds strange, but a neurosurgeon isn't like House, where he's making all these diagnoses. Most people come to a neurosurgeon with a diagnosis already made, a brain tumor, a ruptured disc, and you're the surgeon, and sure, you've got to be technically exact, but from an intellectual standpoint, the law is much different. Every case is different. All the facts are different. Every piece of law that you apply is usually different. So it helps satisfy intellectual curiosity.
Well, that is fascinating, just fascinating. So tie all of this into the book as far as it really is that complicated, and this is about the myths between men and women in everyday situations. So how does that all tie together?
Sure. As you can imagine, as a neurosurgeon and as an attorney, from a relationship couple's standpoint, married couples in particular, family couples, you can see a great deal of stress in terms of these interpersonal dynamics, both from a neurosurgical standpoint to a legal standpoint. And it all has to do with stress on the couple. You tell a couple that the husband or the wife has a brain tumor and has 8 to 12 months to live, that puts a lot of stress there. Or a child who has broken their neck by diving into a swimming pool, and so you've got a paraplegic child that you have to deal with for the rest of your life. So you see the stresses on the relationship. And then as a lawyer, from a legal standpoint, clearly I do some family law, and I've read about family law, but also the stress that these folks go through, you see all the dynamics that these people bring. In terms of the book, after my divorce, I started back in the, quote, dating scene, if you will. And I was just making all these observations in terms of the reactions folks have in terms of new dating or all of the problems they bring with them, the viewpoints they take, the outrageously unrealistic expectations they put upon themselves and others. And so I was talking to my friends about this. They said to me, basically, look, you're an evolved male, you've done a lot of things, you have all this knowledge, quit talking about it and write a book so everyone else can benefit from this. So I had a group of friends, three or four if I remember correctly, and we sat down for a weekend and pretty much came up with sort of the bare bones outline of the book and came up with several of the chapter headings as well. I, being fairly obsessive, I wrote a chapter a month and finished up the book. And I had people vet it as it was being read just to get, you know, a person's reaction.
That is exciting. So between your experience and friends and so forth, you really came up with the differences of the myths that we hear of men and women and how they react. And you probably, like you said, between the situations of surgery and their health issues, you saw the reaction probably of a different reaction between men and women under those stressful situations.
Absolutely. And it's the stress that really brings out the core person. Because once you strip everything away and you put some stress on people, they start going back to their old sort of videos that they have, their own scripts that they use.
I call it the knee-jerk reaction.
I think knee-jerk reaction, a reflex, and it tells a lot about the person themselves, actually. Mm-hmm. And I will be the first to say that this isn't really a marriage manual, and it's not for folks, you know, like in the early 20s when they're just trying to experiment and going through. I mean, this is a book written in terms of an evolved male's, I guess, observations and recommendations. Mm-hmm. And some people will accept them and some won't.
Well, what would be, give us an example of, say, a chapter of one of the myths.
Of one of the myths, okay. A good place to start probably is a chapter entitled, Women Always Want What They Can't Have. And it's more of I use that chapter title somewhat because it raises eyebrows and people get interested, but I would also say this about many males as well, that they don't know what they want. That women in particular have this ideal that has been hoisted upon them by society where they have to have the picket fence, the husband, the 2.5 children, the Labrador retriever, and that's what they're after. And they're fooling themselves, or some of them are fooling themselves, because they always wonder, well, why is it that I want this, but I always end up with these guys who never call me, never show me that they're affectionate, but I'm always hooked on them. It's like I want these bad boys. And the point that I always make, and I was making in the chapter, is that you don't necessarily know what you want. You may think you want this, and society tells you to want this, but that's not what you really want. And you go to the other extreme, and that's why you want this excitement. You want this sort of the chase of the dating situation. The other possibility and the other thing that you think about is that there is certainly a subset of both men and women that have low self-esteem. And so their thought is, I can't possibly be involved or love this person who loves me, because if they love me, they must be much worse than I am, because I'm not worth anything to be, or I'm not worth loving. And so, I mean, you've got two subsets there.
It's so true, and this is, especially if you're talking about people after divorce, These, as a divorce mentor, I see the same concerns. You know, I spend time, first of all, helping build that person up, so to speak, or helping them believe in themselves again, that they are worth something or valuable. And of course, like you said, every relationship is different. If there's been verbal abuse, physical abuse, you know, of course, there's a situation where the self-esteem is pretty much gone. But you're so right. I'm just so excited to hear this, because I'm thinking, wow, he really gets it. You know, that people do get into this thing of, I'm supposed to do this because of society's pressure. And I know myself, I talk to my clients and they feel pressured to jump into the dating game probably quicker than they should. Or I always say, come up for air, take the time to get to know yourself first. But society says that there's something wrong with you if you're home on a Friday and Saturday night by yourself, or you feel pressured because your ex is dating already, and he or she has someone already, and relatives and family are saying, you know, let's match you up, let's, you know, you're just so right. Is that some of the things you're talking about as well?
Absolutely. And you know, my age, most of the women I know, most of the guys I know, are if they're single, they've been divorced. So we're not talking the young folks that haven't been in a marriage. I mean, the majority of people I know are either married or divorced. And when we say divorced, we're not talking necessarily one time, but we're up in the twos and threes. Mm-hmm. And it's true. I mean, people have this idea that if they're alone, that there's something wrong with them. I mean, personally, I would love a Friday night alone with no responsibility and just like, whoa, where did this time come from? But it's true, and you hit upon a point that I really stress throughout the book, is you've got to know yourself. You've got to get inside, throw out everything you think you know, and figure out what you really want and know yourself. I mean, I personally, in my relationships, I'm always monogamous. But as I've grown older, I see a place for this polyamory, as long as people are honest with one another.
Sure.
And if everyone's okay with it, if everyone is on board, on the same page, then that's okay, I think. Mm-hmm. And that's not what society says in the least.
Mm-hmm. People, and what I see, and that's probably why divorce, second time around, that rates of divorce are higher for second marriages and even higher for third, and probably because people are not taking the time coming up for air, getting to really know themselves. You know, if you've been married 20, 30 years, to me, between climbing the financial ladder, raising children, and so forth, you know, I know myself, I felt like I was on the back burner for many years, and all of a sudden, it's like, wow, who am I? And I'm going to start dating again? Dating changed a long time since 20 years ago. So it's a whole new ballgame. So I did want to pause here for a second as far as this book to me is just a great book. And I'm really excited for people to get to know where they can learn more about you and your book. Would you like to give them your website?
Sure. My book you can find on Amazon, obviously, Barnes & Noble. You can go to the publisher, Author House. You can see my website. The website itself is itreallyisthatcomplicatedbook.com. You can go to my website, charlesrawlings.com. It links all my other websites. You can order it from there. It's just Google my name. It comes up.
And Rawlings is spelled Rawlings with an S.
That's correct, yes, ma'am.
Something that you and I talked about before the show, it's almost during marriage, some of the things that cause marriage. Is that, I think, what you were talking about, or we were talking about the loneliness? Does the book touch upon that, or is that something we were just talking about in general?
No, the book does talk about that. It talks about what I like to say is the psychodynamic horrors of marriage. As you go further and further down the path of sort of inertia and ennui, in terms of just letting things happen, letting things pass you by. And a lot of it has to do with very poor communication skills between the couples, loss of respect, and then fear, because you can't be honest with someone if you're living in fear of something. If there is something that you want to talk to this person about, but you're afraid that your partner is going to judge you or have negative feelings about you or have some sort of, as you would say, knee-jerk reaction, you're not going to talk to that person about it. And so it's going to eat at you and eat at you. And as the years go by, it's going to be one of the things that really starts wearing away at the foundation.
And people drift apart. And probably people don't even realize it. It's, like you said, it's chipping away, chipping away. There's less communication. I'm sure there's then less sex. And then all of a sudden, the whole relationship is just drifting and drifting until it comes to a head.
And that doesn't necessarily have to come to a head. Just people drift away. And about sexual boredom, I was reading a study, I think it was just a couple of weeks ago, that almost 46% of folks at one time or another will say that they are sexually bored. Mm-hmm. And if you're in marriage, you've got a partner. What you've got to do is actually talk to this person to express what you want, how you want it, what to do, when to do, whatever. At least go talk to the person. Mm-hmm. But a lot of that discussion is muted because of your fear of the judgment of the other person, the disrespect of the other person. And it's probably coming on years and years of small fibs, small lies, maybe infidelity, disrespect. And you're not going to sit there and talk to this person because you don't trust them.
Oh, absolutely. If the wall goes up and there's no trust, forget it, as far as I'm concerned. So is society really dealing with this as far as, I mean, the divorce rate is high. So something's not working. Something's not going right. Are we addressing some of these issues in marriage?
In my research, I don't see that society is addressing these issues at all. I mean, it takes a very powerful couple to actually face this, look and say, you know, I want to change this. I love you, but I want to change this. I can't go to my preordained 3-year-old scripts that I knew as a child. I have to learn myself better. I have to turn myself around, and we have to start talking, and we have to start being honest with each other.
And you have to have both parties willing to do the work. I think that's where I see friends, family, couples, so whatever, that there's one party that wants to, and there's another party that doesn't have any interest in saying, everything's fine. I see that.
Absolutely. And in fact, that's actually one of my quotes from the book. It says, in a relationship, the one who holds the power is the person who cares the least.
Like that. That's so true. So the person saying everything's fine is really the one holding the power, leaving the other one frustrated. And if they're passive-aggressive, that's even more difficult because the other one feels helpless. And no matter what he or she does, it's like nothing works. There's no connection. There's no communication. And I see people just drifting further and further apart.
Absolutely. And the person who doesn't care has all the power. This person who does care is frustrated, is like beating their head against the wall. Occasionally it gets to, okay, look, if you'll just listen to me or do this, I'll buy a car or we'll get a new house or we'll do, you know, it turns into some sort of blackmail, extortion type of thing.
So what you feel that, you know, I always think there's got to be some hope. I mean, because if we can prevent divorce, there's children involved, and we're creating a new generation of children that unfortunately know divorce too well. So how do we stop this? I mean, do we have to wake up the parents and make them conscious somehow to say, learn how to communicate, learn how to deal with things? I don't know. Or do people just give up and say, yeah, you know what, I've just had it.
Good question, and that's what my last chapter really deals with. It's more the optimism to a certain degree if people will wake up. The last chapter really deals with two issues. One, knowing yourself, and then second, having no fear. And once you know yourself, then it segues right into having no fear, because at that point, there's nothing you really do need to fear. Fear is a unrealistic emotion that is grounded upon an unlikely event in the future, and that's what fear is.
In fact, I call it, that may be your truth, and then I have my truth, and then there's the truth. So this, everyone has their truth of what they believe to be true. I call it mental fiction of what they believe to be true. And if people can't break through that, you know, as a mentor, there's one exercise, and I have shared this on the show before, and maybe it's appropriate here, where I find that people don't know how to listen to each other. And they feel they are, but really they're not. And the story goes where there's the wife is so wanting to communicate with the husband. She just wants to talk. And he's clicking the TV clicker there and saying, I'm listening, dear, I'm listening. And she's becoming more and more frustrated. So I happened to talk to both of them, and they said they were committed and they wanted to make this marriage work. So I gave them a little exercise on listening to see how well they do listen. The exercise was at least 3 times a week, they're to shut off all electronics, no TV, no computer, no phone or anything. And they're just to talk and communicate for 15 minutes. So they decided to take a walk because it will avoid temptation if the phone rings or something. But the rules were that the first person would talk whatever about anything for 5 minutes. The other person's job was just to listen. Don't say a word. Don't fix it. Just listen. After that 5 minutes, they were to repeat and just repeat back what they heard and then ask, did I get that right? And it was amazing the first couple of times they did this. They felt awkward. They were stumbling all over everything, interruptions, and they're trying to fix it. But then they got to the point where when the other one was really listening and repeating it back and asked if they got that right, they started to learn things about each other that they didn't even know. They were amazed. And the reaction was, really, you feel that way? I didn't know you did. Oh, my gosh, I didn't know that. So then they kept practicing it, and to this day they're doing well, they're married, and they still do that exercise 3 times a week just to stay in touch. So that's just a listening exercise.
I think that's excellent. And you mentioned something in the course of your discussion when you said fix it. See, and that's what males, especially alpha males, want to do. We want to fix things. And even I, having talked about this subject for a year, I still fall into that trap. It's like, okay, I hear you, now let me fix it. And it's like, oh my God, I'm okay, chill out, walk back, just listen for a minute. But that's what alpha males want to do. They immediately see a problem, and they're like, well, you know, here, this is what you should do. And women are like, I don't want necessarily to be told what to do, I just want you to listen to me so I can feel better. And once you've got the solution in your head, as a male, you're not listening to anything else that comes out of her mouth, because all you're wanting to do is say, here, do this, and that'll be done, and we'll fix that.
And that's why it was so good for the for both parties having to repeat back what they heard. They really had to be listening, mouth shut, and be listening, and not ready to be fixing things. And the fixing was not allowed. So, that is right, you know, and I look at it that whether it's the male or the female, there's not an intention to hurt, or they really just want to help, and they have good intentions, but it's not what the other person wants to hear.
Oh, sure. As an alpha male, you have every good intention, and you're not trying to hurt someone or condescend. It's like, I think you're asking my opinion, and okay, let's take this one thing at a time. And I can't listen to everything until I fix this one thing. And the other person is like, I'm just talking. I'm not wanting someone to fix this because I have my own ideas most of the time. But yeah, I mean, we're not trying to be mean or condescending.
No.
That's the way the program.
Yeah, definitely. The other thing we talked about that doesn't help a marriage, and everything that we talked leads to this, you know, as far as if we're not communicating, we're not listening, we're drifting apart. You know, marriage can become extremely lonely. And I tend to personally think that that is the nail on the head. People reach a point where they just don't want to be lonely anymore. Is that mentioned in your book as well?
It is probably not necessarily the way you explain it.
Okay.
But more the way the book does is they talk about growing apart and just break down the communication and the fact that people just give up. It's like, and they give up, and based on their socioeconomic backgrounds, if you're well off, then sure, you can get a divorce as long as it's not going to cost you too much. When you're in the middle or lower socioeconomic patterns, you're just going to stay with the person because it's not worth getting a divorce, because the society is set up for a couple, taxes, renting, home ownership, all that, and many times the wife in this particular instance doesn't have a skill set, doesn't have a job set that she could rely on, and so they stick together, and it's absolutely true the way you're saying it from a loneliness standpoint. They're insular. Each one goes about their own life, their own way, and there's never interaction, and they're only there just as a shell.
And it does eventually, to me, either people, well, it does hurt the marriage, of course. It drives people apart. They end up getting a divorce, or they live together like roommates and then maybe have third parties involved. Who knows?
Well, that's absolutely true. It's like what I was saying. They just sort of are ships passing in the night. Living their life is like, maybe they're probably even bad roommates. I mean, they fuss at each other, leaving the door open, not doing this, not taking out the garbage. And then, I'm sure once that happens, you're going to get a third party involved. Someone's going to break down and say, I'm done.
I've had it. I can't take it anymore. Let's repeat your website again. I want to make sure that people know. Well, as far as connecting with your book, you said Amazon and
Nobles, Author House is the publisher. My website is charlesrawlings.com, and the book website is itreallyisthatcomplicatedbook.com. And all of them are linked. I have another book out that's an underwater photography coffee table book, and you can go. It's linked in there, so it's
great.
All linked.
Awesome. So if you had to wrap it all up to say, this book is designed to support people in their marriage as well as people getting back into the dating game, or I just want to make sure people understand how it really can support them.
This book is about relationships,
okay.
Be it a married couple, be it a dating couple,
okay.
Be it same-sex couple. It's about relationships.
Okay.
And the pitfalls associated with it, what needs to go into it for a good relationship, and the keystone and the capstone, if you will, is knowing yourself and having no fear with open and honest communication.
And it sounds like they're going to walk away with some great tools to start to implement them, whether they're married, in a relationship, wanting to get into a new relationship. To me, it sounds like it's just good information that needs to be discussed and talked about.
I would agree, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. You know, I just think that some of these things we're avoiding, or we're just assuming that, or we're just not talking about them.
I think it's more about talking about them.
Definitely. And for me, it's always the big picture. Because, you know, working with people after divorce, I see their behavior and how it can influence the children or the teenagers or even the grown adult children. So to me, I'm an advocate to really shake those parents and say, get conscious here and wake up and be aware of your behavior, because your kids see and hear everything, and it doesn't matter their age. So I've been through it. I understand. But 20 years ago, we didn't have a lot of this support, and that's why I'm doing what I'm doing today, because I felt there wasn't enough support. So, but the bottom line, somehow I was given the reality check to say, whatever I need to do it, because I'm it. The kids are looking at me. They were 12 and 9 at the time, so I have to learn to be the best mom I can be. So I was willing to do it, what I needed to do or what it takes to be the best parent. So to me, yes, it was tough. You know, with people that have been through the divorce, it's emotional, being a single parent, all of that, it's tough. But yet, you know, we had one show where we said, do you love your kids more than you hate your ex? So to me, you've got to really be conscious of that so that you can be the best you can be for your kids. That, to me, is a big picture. Plus, hey, who doesn't want a nice relationship along the way, though, right?
I agree with everything, absolutely.
Well, Dr. Rollins, it was such a joy having you on the show. It's a different angle that I just love, making sure that everybody goes, and you can even Google it. It really is that complicated, and to me, it's right on where we need to be conscious of relationships. Anything else you want to add?
No, Joni, I think that does it. I think we've summed it up well, and I appreciate the opportunity, and this has been a pleasure.
Well, I love it. It's just fun to have you on the show. And also to our listeners, you can see this video in the archives, which and go to our website, which is divorceview.com. While you're there, my co-host, who's not with us tonight, Rosalind Sadaka, she has some information there to support you. I also have a program to support you. It's called GettingAlongSolutions.com, which goes right along with what Dr. Rawlings is talking about as well. So thanks for tuning in. We always look forward to be here to support you, and then we'll see you next week.